Hello, I'm Fatima Anwar, and today I'm joined by Dr. Angie Hobbs, a Professor of Philosophy here at Warwick, and also a Senior Fellow in the Public Understanding of Philosophy. And, as Big Brother is about to return to our screens on Channel 5, we're going to be discussing the area of celebrity, and more specifically, ancient philosopher Plato's take on it. Thank you for joining me today, Dr. Hobbs.
Pleasure to be here.
Okay, well, just to start with, could you just tell me a little bit about how the ancient Greeks viewed fame and how they thought you could achieve fame?
Well, prior to philosophers like Plato, if you're looking at, say, an epic poet like Homer, for example, yes, there is quite a lot of interest in fame, and some of the characters in Homer even want fame partly for fame's sake. So Achilles, for instance, in the Iliad, when he's returning to the battle to fight the Trojans because he wants to avenge the death of his beloved friend Patroclus, he actually says, "I'm returning to fight partly to avenge Patroclus, but also because I want glory." He actually says that. So that they do know about the desire for wanting glory. However, the crucial thing is that the only way for an ancient Greek to obtain glory or fame was to do something of, you know, notable benefit to your society, which was going to get talked about and discussed. Possibly in some cases also to do something of notable harm to your society, but you had to do something because without any kind of mass media, the only way to get your name out there was to be discussed or to attract the interest of some poet who was going to write about your exploits. So you had to be a contributor. So, in other words, yes, they could want fame. They were attracted by the notion of fame and glory as some kind of compensation for death and mortality. However, they wanted to achieve it by doing something virtuous and heroic and noble, either in deed or by writing some magnificent work that was going to live on after their death, in making some substantive contribution. Mm-hmm. Of course, by the time we get to philosophers like Plato, he wants us to rethink our whole attitude to fame, and things start to change. But that's the key point. Before Plato, yes, you can get Greeks who find the whole notion of fame glamorous and enticing. They are interested in it, but they know they have to basically do something heroic or noble or write something magnificent in order to get it.
How is Plato's conception of fame then different, and how does that fit into his ideas of psychology as well?
Yes, well, that's a very good question. Now, Plato has this notion of a tripartite psyche. So not literally in the sense of three separate geographical parts, but we're talking about a personality with three different aspects. And he says we have our highest aspect, he says, is our rational aspect, which desires truth and reality. The second part, in terms of worthiness, if you like, is what he calls the thumos, and it's basically to do with our position in the world, our sense of self-respect, how we view ourselves, how others view us, and it desires fame and honour and glory and success and victory. And then our third part, the lowest part in Plato's eyes, is what he calls our appetitive part, which wants material things such as food, drink, experiences such as sex and material goods, the money needed to buy all these things. So that's his psychology. So he does allow for the fact that humans are motivated by a desire for glory and fame and success. But it's not, he thinks, it shouldn't, or at least it shouldn't be our most important driving force. And in the ideally just state that he creates in his dialogue, The Republic, he says that what the rulers of this state need to do, and these, as you know, are the philosopher rulers, they should harness the human desire for fame to make sure that it's attached to worthy goals, i.e. that if you grow up in a good state, in a well-run society, you will only be rewarded and praised for doing things or creating things that are virtuous and worthwhile and that are going to benefit your society. That is going to be the only way you will get the fame that you desire. So yes, he's going to take this basic human psychological motivation, but harness it and say, let's use it for the common good. It's not left to sort of just run amok on its own. So this whole notion of being, you know, fame for fame's sake would be very alien to him, and he would regard that as very dangerous.
So he wouldn't see celebrity as the highest level to attain to. It would be the rational part is more important.
No, absolutely. The thing to do is to try to save your soul by being as good a human being as possible. That's your mission on this life, to try to make yourself as good a person as possible and live as good a life as possible, and in the process to save your soul and care for your soul. Fame is only ever helpful if you want to be famous for being virtuous, famous for being a noble kind of hero.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and how is that different, would you say, to how we view fame today?
Well, I mean, you've got this extraordinary sort of celebrity culture at the moment where it does look as if, for lots of complicated reasons that we can go on to discuss in a moment, the idea is you just want to get famous, fame for fame's sake, without necessarily making or creating a contribution that's going to help your society. Now, that is extremely interesting. And indeed, some of the things that you can get famous for are things which Plato would regard as even lower than the desire for fame, namely, you know, hedonistic desires to indulge and gratify your physical appetites. Now, this would be extraordinary to Plato, and he would regard this as a society gone very badly wrong. I think it's a phenomenon we need to take very seriously and consider, you know, why people are confusing fame and celebrity with the kind of activities and creations that are justly worth celebrating. So that, you know, we seem to confuse the notion of things worth celebrating with the notion of celebrity. Why are people doing this? Well, of course, partly it's because it's much easier now, you know, since, I guess, the middle of the 17th century with the advent of the first newspapers or news sheets, you've had this proliferation of media, you know, first print news, then photography, radio, television, now, of course, you know, the web. And of course, it's much easier for people to get their names out there, as we'll see in a bit. I think that all might be about to implode. Mm. So it's much easier. But then you've still got to think, this is very curious. Why is it simply that people want to be famous just for being famous? And why is it simply that people want to be famous in itself? And if so, why? Is it because they just don't want to be invisible? That they're scared of their lives kind of passing by and nobody knowing about them? They simply want to be known. And one can have some understanding for that, particularly if you think that we now, most of us, live in much more urban communities. We may not know our neighbours, we may not know the people in our own block of flats. So whereas 150 years ago, many of us would have been living in small rural communities where everybody knew everybody else. You would walk out in the street and people would say hello to you. They knew who you were. That might not be the case now. And so people might feel this very deep need for total strangers to know about their existence, just to affirm that they're alive and on the planet and their lives are not passing by unnoticed. And I think that's part of it. But I also think what's going on is people are confusing fame with all sorts of other things, that they might think that because their name is known and they've got a lot of followers on Twitter or whatever, that they are somehow loved and desired. They might be confusing fame with lovability. They might be terrified of death, and they might see fame as sort of somehow warding off the fear of being annihilated. You know, they might fear being annihilated, and they might think this is a way of guarding against that. They might even more, in a more complex way, be thinking that somehow they're living a successful life, because they've got a lot of followers, because a lot of people are seeing them on television or so on, that this is somehow an achievement in itself. And that's a very complicated thing to think about, because if you live in a culture which does have a cult of celebrity and fame for fame's sake, then on those terms, these people are succeeding. They are living a successful life in those very narrow and, I would say, very sterile cultural conditions. I mean, I find that very sad, and I find that an indictment of the culture. But if they want success in that culture, then that's one way of going about it. That seems, you know, very depressing to me. I would long to get back to the day when to be celebrated, you have to do something worth celebrating. And I think we might, you know, we might be heading towards that, because if you think about the root meaning of fame, as we've seen, and it meant in ancient Greece, you had to be talked about. People had to be discussing you. In fact, the word fame comes from the Latin fama, meaning to be a subject of report. Now, you can have your name on, you can have all your own websites and all the rest of it. You can have your name out there, and yet no one might be talking about you. The more people are on Facebook or Twitter or have their websites, the more people appear on programmes like Big Brother, the less they're actually going to be talked about. It's simply not going to be possible to talk about all these people. So we might get to a point where, in fact, this growth of the media, which is making this instant fame possible, actually starts defeating the enterprise, and actually we get to a point where, in fact, people are not famous, even if their names and their faces are out in the media. And then we might get back to a happy situation where people have to contribute. And in terms of people perhaps subconsciously feeling, oh, if I'm really famous, you know, maybe my name will live on after death. Maybe we should consider the relative decline of organised religion in some Western societies at the moment. And maybe people are perhaps more frightened of death than they used to be, I don't know. Or at least more frightened that they are somehow going to stop at death, and more desperate that their name lives on in some way. And that's just a speculation.
Would you say in some ways then celebrity culture is replacing religion, perhaps?
I've certainly read stuff, I've even talked before about whether in some ways celebrities are sort of replacing the old, you know, gods, you know, certainly say the old Greek gods. And, you know, I think there's something in that, because what we haven't yet discussed is not just the people who want to be famous, but for people who are watching all this, who don't necessarily want to be famous themselves, but want other people to be famous. They want famous people to exist. And that's a separate, you know, psychological conundrum, which is absolutely fascinating. I think they feel they want these sort of glittering, glamorous people to exist, just so they know that it's possible that life, they feel they're living better lives than they are in their little sitting rooms. They may be quite wrong about that, but that's maybe how they feel. And they want to sort of turn on the television and feel that a bit of vicarious stardust is being scattered around. Now, I think that's probably all totally deceptive. I don't think a lot of very famous people, you know, do find their fame that easy to live with. But I think non-famous people can think the life of famous people is all very smooth and easy and rather wonderful, and just sort of want to feel these almost godlike creatures exist out there. It's very, very strange. Yes, the psychology of people who don't want to be famous themselves but want to watch programmes about famous people is worthy of a lot of discussion.
I think that's quite interesting, because Greek tragedy is similar in the sense that you live vicariously through the tragedy and you have a sense of catharsis at the end. And I was wondering if maybe we feel that way when we see celebrities, we live through their glamorous lives.
I think that's very perceptive. I think there's a lot of vicarious living going on. And we must remember that not only are people building up these often quite ordinary characters into glamorous creatures that they really aren't, they're also then pulling them down. I mean, here's the other rather dark side of all this, the kind of pressure we put on people who we've made famous. We put a lot of pressure on them, and then we make it very difficult for them to stay in that position, and then when we feel like it, we tear them down again. So there's a kind of unpleasant, there's vicariousness, but there's also a kind of sense of power. We're putting you there. We're the audience. We're the viewing figures. We're the people buying the newspapers and the magazines. We can stop doing all this and we can pull you down again. So, yes, there's also a kind of some repressed kind of power games going on as well, I think.
After all, they're not characters, they're actually human beings in the end.
Well, no, that's right. And it's a very, a very tough life. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of genuinely famous people are very lonely. Yeah. I think Shakespeare calls Coriolanus a lonely dragon. Mm-hmm. It's a tough old world being a celebrity, and a very precarious one. I mean, that's another thing that Plato says about the life of fame, which is really interesting. And Aristotle makes the same point too, that it's a very unstable life. If you base your life on fame, you're not in control of it, because you might do something wonderful or make something wonderful, but it's not up to you whether your contribution is recognised or not. You're entirely dependent on the views and preferences of people, most of whom don't know you, many of whom may not understand what you're about, and, as we've seen, can not only build you up maybe beyond what you deserve, but can then maybe pull you down again, lower than you deserve. So it's deeply precarious and unstable.
How do you think that Big Brother kind of epitomises our celebrity obsession, and how do you think that Plato would have reacted to that?
I can hardly bear to think how Plato might have reacted to Big Brother. I mean, he even wanted to ban poets as wonderful as Homer from the ideally just state, or at least the character of Socrates in the Republic says he wants to ban poets such as Homer from the ideally just state because he thinks art is deeply dangerous and corrosive to human virtue. Goodness knows if the Iliad and if Sophocles, Oedipus and things don't make it in, I have no conception of his reaction to Big Brother. He would be deeply, deeply sad. He would be very sad that people, he would say, are being ruled by the wrong elements in their soul. They're letting their, if you remember, you've got that second element, the thumos, which desires honour and fame and success and being recognised. And then you've got the third element, the hedonistic, appetitive element. He would say these are the two elements ruling our rational desires for truth and reality. And he would say this is going to stop us, not just stop us being virtuous, but stop us being happy and flourishing and living flourishing lives. Because what Plato does that's so very profound and interesting is that he actually identifies the state of your psyche in which reason is in control and is telling the other two elements basically what to honour and what to desire. That state of your psyche, which he calls psychic harmony, he equates it both with your moral excellence, but also with your flourishing as a human being. In a weaker term for it would be happiness, though that's not a very good translation. So he would say that our cult of celebrity manifested in things like Big Brother is actually stopping people. It's stopping people living the most flourishing and productive lives that they could. It's stopping them being as virtuous as they could, and it's stopping them being as happy as they could. It's keeping them trapped in these lesser appetites and desires, and it's stunting their growth. And he would see this as a deeply, deeply saddening thing, but he would blame the culture more than the individuals caught up in that culture. I mean, he would want a hugely radical overhaul. I have no doubt whatsoever that he would be very paternalistic and authoritarian. Yes. And ban Big Brother, if not television. I'm not saying I support Plato in that, but he would take a tough line.
Well, you mentioned Plato's views on the poets, and he does have strong views on censorship. And what would you think he would say about the type of role model then being presented in Big Brother and the effect that that's having on children, for example, and teenagers?
I think it would make him weep. I think it would make him weep to hear children in playgrounds saying that, you know, they want to grow up to be a certain kind of model or wife or, you know, somebody strangely orange. Why we've equated, you know, success with being orange is a mystery to me, but we seem to have done so. No, I mean, absolutely, he would want to reinstate more inspirational models who really are helping society, either through their actions or their words or their creations. Whether you become famous in your profession or not doesn't just depend on how good you are at that profession. It also depends on how much that profession is in the limelight and how much media attention it gets. How many fantastic lawyers or surgeons could any of us name? You know, probably barely a handful. In fact, in terms of surgeons, I can probably, you know, just about scrape three. And yet these are people who might be doing the most fantastic work, and yet we don't know about them. You know, the media cameras do not track them around, and I'm sure they're deeply relieved about that. So we have to be very, very careful, properly harnessed a human desire for fame and properly understood so we keep it in its place and don't think it's more important than it is. Properly harnessed, it can have some benefits, but let's just remember all the people who do fantastic work for our community, who are not remotely famous, who may not even want to be famous.
Is the desire for fame harmful or beneficial, would you say?
It can be beneficial if it's not your main desire. If it's a secondary desire which you've harnessed to your rational desires for truth and reality and to live the most virtuous and flourishing life possible, then it can be helpful. If you want to be famous for the right kind of thing, for, you know, being a courageous fighter and helping your country in battle or something like that. If it has any other role, then it's hugely harmful for Plato. And again, for me, I would say the same thing. If your desire for fame is harnessed to the right kind of goal, which is really going to help you grow as an individual and live a rich, full, loving, productive life, which helps your community, then it can be helpful. Any other role, hugely dangerous, and certainly the role it's got at the moment, where it seems to be sort of dissociated from any constructive, practical ends, then I think enormously harmful and deeply depressing. I think it's really trapping people and stunting people.
Yes. Thank you very much for speaking with me today, Dr. Hobbs. It's been really interesting. Thank you.
Thank you very much for inviting me.